in about 30 seconds if there's something you need to do to wrap up here. It's a little bit like the start of a basketball game. You check to make sure both the coaches are ready on each side and the clock is set. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a good crowd here tonight and I'd like to welcome all of you here. We have a couple of formalities we need to go through. I will read off the information pertaining to the docket and then we'll get started. Today's public hearing will begin on docket number EL08-016, entitled In the Matter of the Application of East River Electric Power Cooperative Incorporated for a permit to construct 9.5 miles of 115 kV transmission line in Lincoln and Turner counties. The date is August 7, 2008. The time is 6 p.m. and the place of this hearing is the American Legion Post 283, Main Street, Chancellor, South Dakota. My name is Gary Hansen. With me today are my fellow commissioners Steve Kolbeck and Dusty Johnson. This hearing concerns an application for a facility permit to construct a 115 kV transmission line between the Virgil Fodness High Voltage Substation located south of T in Lincoln County and the Chancellor Substation located east of Chancellor in Turner County. The line is needed to serve the expansion of an ethanol plant served by East River's member system, Southeastern Electric Cooperative Incorporated, as well as other electric loads which continue to grow in Turner and Lincoln counties. The purpose of this hearing is to provide information to the public about East River's proposed project and to hear public comments regarding the proposed project. Interested persons have the right to present their views and comments regarding the application, and we want to encourage all of you to please do so. A copy of the application is on file with the Lincoln and Turner County auditors. The public may also access the application and all other non-confidential documents in the file on the Commission's website at www.puc.sd.gov. Under Commission Actions, Commission Dockets, Electric Dockets, and 2008 Electric Dockets. Then scroll down to EL08-016. The parties to this proceeding at this time are East River and the Public Utilities Commission. Under South Dakota law, each municipality, county, and governmental agency in the area where the facility is proposed to be constructed, any nonprofit organization formed in whole or in part to promote conservation or natural beauty or to protect the environment, personal health, or other biological values, to preserve historical sites, to promote consumer interests, to represent commercial and industrial groups, or to promote the orderly development of the area in which the facility is to be constructed, or any interested person may be granted party status in this proceeding by making written application to the Commission on or before August 11, 2008. We have applications available here this evening if anyone here wishes to apply for party status. For its permit to be approved, East River must show that the proposed transmission line will comply with all applicable laws and rules, that the transmission line will not pose a threat of serious injury to the environment or to the social and economic condition of inhabitants or the expected inhabitants in the siting area, that the transmission line will not substantially impair the health, safety, or welfare of the inhabitants, and that the transmission line will not unduly interfere with the orderly development of the region, with due consideration having been given to the views of governing bodies of affected local units of government. Based on these factors, the Commission will decide whether the permit for the project should be granted, denied, or granted upon such terms, conditions, or modifications of the construction, operation, or maintenance of the facilities as the commission finds appropriate. We'll begin the hearing by having East River make presentation to explain its proposed project. Following that presentation, we will take comments from any interested persons, and we want to encourage you to make whatever presentations that you feel comfortable in making. That's the reason we're here this evening. We also want to remind you to please sign in. Also, I would like to remind you that we have a court reporter here, so we would like you to state your name clearly so that we will have on record who has been giving testimony. I believe Bob Saar will be the spokesman here tonight for East River. Bob, would you please introduce the others with you tonight and then begin your presentation?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Can everybody hear me okay? Thank you. And I know we have the air conditioning unit going, which I think is a good thing, but if it gets to be we're having any trouble hearing, I'm sure we could turn that off. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission, commission staff. My name is Bob Saar. I'm the general counsel for East River Electric. And I'd like to introduce the employees of East River Electric that are here tonight. To my right is Jim Edwards. He is the assistant general manager of operations. To my left is Dan Wall. He's our transmission engineering services manager. Ken Booz is in the back of the room. Ken is the planning and design engineer for East River Electric. Ron Golden is the land management supervisor. And Kurt Donnellan is land agent for East River Electric. And some of you may have had contact from Kurt as he's been working on getting the line sited around the around this area. We also have Brad Chardine here. Brad is the general manager at Southeastern Electric Cooperative. And the facilities that East River is intending to build in this area will deliver power to Southeastern so that they can in turn deliver it to, not only to the ethanol plant, but also to other customers in their service territory. So ultimately, Southeastern will be the cooperative delivering the electricity that these lines will bring into this area. And then we also have Rick Suri, who is the general manager from the POET biorefining plant at Chancellor. In just a minute, I will turn the mic over to Mr. Wall, and he has a short presentation on what we are intending to do, and it's got a lot of good information. We have some hard copies of that, and I would ask that the commissioners and the commission please take the electronic copy and the hard copy and make that a part of the record. We also would ask that the audio tape and any other documentary evidence that comes up at hearing also be made part of the record as well.
We will do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. As I mentioned, Mr. Wall is going to talk a little bit about the project, but I'll just say this. It is an essential project to go out there and serve the needs of this area. In particular, with the expansion at the POET Chancellor plant, it's critical that we're able to get out there and get this done to adequately serve their needs. Also, I think it's probably no secret to the folks in the room in this area is seeing a lot of development come out from Sioux Falls and within the local areas here. And this project will also help serve those future needs. And it's really going to be an important backbone for what Southeastern needs to do to ultimately serve its member consumers in the area. So we think it is a very important project. It's a carefully planned project. We've worked hard to minimize any impacts on landowners and on the environment. And we ultimately think it meets the statutory test and requirements that the PUC needs to review for siting. I will say this, we're going to make the presentation, we're going to hear questions, we want to hear input from the audience, but we also realize sometimes you may not think of something as the presentation is going on, or maybe you're not comfortable raising the issue here on the record, and certainly you can rest assured that all the East River staff and Brad Chardine, we're happy to discuss any of your particulars, either here in the public forum afterwards or at any point in time, because we want to make sure we do everything to get this line built in a way that really serves the public well, as well as the needs of all the consumers. So we're firmly committed to seeing if you have any questions or comments, and would be happy to meet with you or to address those during the proceedings. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I will, with your permission, turn the mic over to Dan Wall, and he will do a short PowerPoint presentation on what we would like to do with this 115 line. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, commissioners and staff and members of the public, as Bob said, my name is Dan Wall. My job is to try and answer the who, what, why, where, and when. Hopefully I can do that adequately, but if we have questions, I'll be glad to entertain those. Hopefully this the light doesn't interfere with the PowerPoint, but it appears to be a pretty good deal. East River Electric, as Bob briefly touched on, we're owned by 20 electric cooperatives and one community. This map shows the footprint of East River's service area and the rural electrics that own East River. We're what you'd call a wholesale power supplier. We pick the high voltage electricity up at the delivery points, move it across distance to the local distribution substations. I understand some of you receive your power from Xcel Energy and possibly aren't as familiar with the rural electrics as the members of the cooperatives are. So Southeastern Electric out of Marion, South Dakota, owns a portion of East River, and it's our responsibility as East River to bring the power to their substation for their needs of their customers. Now, unfortunately, the green lines do not show up as well with the fluorescent light, but I've superimposed East River's transmission system on the map. We have about 2,800 miles of line and 240 substations. Today we're talking about this geographic area in southeastern South Dakota. Now what I have here is a map of the greater Sioux Falls area. When the design engineer and Kenny's sitting at the back, we start to put together a plan for meeting the needs of a consumer such as the ethanol plant. Certainly we look at the immediate needs. What impact does it have to the local regional area? Where are the farms and the homes, the rivers, the interstate highway, shelter belts? We take a look at all those things. We also have to look at the long-range plan, and that's why I brought this map up here. The utilities, whether it's electric or gas or water, have to have long-range plans for the needs of the future. Back this particular map, again, the green lines represent our 69,000-volt system in the Sioux Falls area. The substations don't show, but they're along this line. The community of Hartford, Chancellor down here. East River serves the greater rural area around Sioux Falls. The purple lines represent Xcel Energy's high-voltage lines, and they serve in closer to the Sioux Falls, and then they have some lines that come out. They serve, I believe, the city of Chancellor as well. In 1999, well, I'll get ahead of myself. Next, I want to talk to you about the high-voltage delivery points in the area. Western Area Power Administration has a high-voltage delivery station in northeastern Sioux Falls. The Virgil Fodna substation south of T was constructed in 2003. That's owned by the Western Area Power Administration as well as East River Electric. The VT Hanlon substation near Montrose, South Dakota, is a high-voltage substation. It takes electricity off the steel line coming from Fort Thompson. That's owned by East River Electric. Back in 2000, Kenny does long-range engineering studies, and the study started to, we were plugging in the growth of Sioux Falls as it started to escalate, and it became quite clear to us that the growth was going to exceed our 69 kV system. So we, beginning in 2003, with the construction of the Virgil Fodna substation, we've gone on with a Public Utility Commission permit to upgrade our 69 kV system in eastern Sioux Falls to 115,000 volts. And we've been working on that since 2003. Completion of that will be early next spring. That'll bring a lot more capacity to the area, and as we all know, the growth that's just exploding in the Sioux Falls area. Recently, we also purchased a piece of land in southeastern Sioux Falls for another high-voltage delivery point to be jointly built by the Western Area Power Administration and East River, possibly in the next 7 years. These are the first steps in trying to meet the needs as our engineering studies showed that the growth was coming on. Additional steps over the next 7 to 10 years are these additional 115,000 volt lines shown here in red. This piece up on the northeast part of Sioux Falls is to support the growth around Brandon, the Corson Industrial Park, the growth that's occurring, growing toward Garrett's in South Dakota. This piece, southwestern Sioux Falls, currently exists at 69,000 volts, and we'll upgrade that to 115,000 volts to meet the needs of the industry that will come along the interstate, other commerce, as well as the rural growth of housing in the area. We also serve the Heart Hospital there in southeastern Sioux Falls, South Dakota. The larger piece of line here, yeah, I want to talk about briefly because this is the long-range engineering piece that starts to tie in with our immediate needs. Currently, there is no high-voltage system in this large geographic area. So the future new line to come up and tie in with Hartford, South Dakota would support Hartford, South Dakota. It also gives us a line that we can tap off of for future substations. We cannot tell at this time how much growth will happen to the west of Sioux Falls and how far it will come out in the next 30 to 40 years. But having this line in place will help us to meet those needs. And finally, it gives us support between both of these high voltage delivery points, the Virgil Fodna substation as well as the VT Hanlon substation. If there's problems with one, the one point can support the other with the addition of the 115,000 volt line. Next, I want to take our attention down here, as I said, where our immediate needs tie into our long range needs. And this is that area that I had circled. Again, our existing 69 kV line is in green. It comes out of Virgil Fodness and it goes down to Chancellor Ethanol Plant, as well as it goes on toward Parker. And this is the long-range engineering piece of 115,000 volts. If this were to go in place, ideally we would use the existing right-of-way coming west out of the Virgil Fodness substation and put both the circuits, the 69 kV line as well as the 115 kV line, on a one pole. And this is what the poles would look like. In fact, on the left side of this structure is a 115,000 volt circuit, and on the right side is a 69 kV circuit. These are the poles going east out of the Virgil Fodness substation toward the interstate, and this is some of the upgrade that we're trying to do for the east side of Sioux Falls. But now I want to move on to the immediate needs and talk about the Great Plains Ethanol Plant. In 2002, I believe, the ground was broken for the Great Plains Ethanol Plant, and Southeastern Electric had the contract to supply power to the ethanol plant. This three-mile line coming into the Great Plains Ethanol Plant did not exist, so we constructed that in 2002 and put in a 69 kV transformation to serve the ethanol plant. At that time, the contract was to meet 5 megawatts of electric power that the ethanol plant projected to use. Since then, the ethanol plant has added processes. It's grown along with the ethanol industry. And in fact, it's going to move on toward 20 megawatts of power. But right now, we are capping the electric usage at the ethanol plant at 14 megawatts of power. And that's because when the facilities were originally constructed, they were to meet the 5 megawatts and not 14 or more. The electric equipment in the existing substation, it's going to be difficult on the electric equipment if they exceed the 14 megawatts. So we're limiting them to 14 megawatts now until we can get an additional transmission line built into the substation so we can bring a higher, more capacity of electricity and meet their needs for the long term. I want to step back to this regional map again and talk about how the high voltage or the power comes to the ethanol plant. Again, we have the two high voltage delivery points. So beginning back in 2002, we had two means to bring the power to the Great Plains ethanol. First, from the VT Hanlon on the 69 kV line, it's 32.5 miles. Our other alternative is to bring it 9.5 miles from the Virgil Fodness substation. And this is having two routes to bring the power, one main feed and a backup feed, or what we call contingencies, is ideal for any business or even your homes or your farms, rather than having you out on a radial line. I want to talk briefly about the electric usage at the ethanol plant. If it moves to 20 megawatts, just to help you understand the size of 20 megawatts, this community that we're in now, Chancellor probably uses about a half a megawatt. The 20 megawatts is 40 times the electric usage of this town. So the ethanol plant at the end of this 32 and a half miles is similar to having 40 Chancellors sitting there trying to bring power to it. This 32 and a half miles, bringing it that distance, it's no longer a viable option because the voltage sag on the 69 kV system for the ethanol plant and the consumers, that other consumers served off of this line, will be too great on the equipment. So the 32 and a half mile feed is no longer viable. The only feed at this time at 14 megawatts is from the Virgil Fodna substation. So our goal is to find a second transmission route into the ethanol plant so we can split the usage up on the ethanol plant. If we need to do maintenance on our lines, rather than shutting the ethanol plant down completely, we can continue to serve part of the ethanol's processes from the 69 kV line. And likewise, if we need to do maintenance on the 69 kV line, we can do the ethanol plant can continue to operate on the 115 kV line with some of its processes. Now I want to move in and talk about the immediate need, what we're talking about tonight, the Chancellor 115 kV transmission line. And again, I'll superimpose the future 115 kV line. Now the first thing to take a look at is how can we use that 115 kV line and tap off of it and build on into the Chancellor ethanol plant. So this would be one option to serve the needs. And again, we'd use this type of a structure, so we'd use the existing right of way. The downside to this is that were a tornado to come through anywhere along this line or up in here, it would take both of the feeds out to the ethanol plant. So the ethanol plant would be totally out of power. If a piece of agricultural equipment were to take one of the poles out, the ethanol plant would be out of power. If East River's linemen needed to get up into the superstructure and work on the insulators, we would be required to shut down the power to the structure, and again, the ethanol plant would be out of power. Lost revenue, idle hands standing around. So the goal is to try and separate the two transmission lines so that Mother Nature cannot affect both transmission lines at the same time, and likewise, we can do maintenance on one while we continue to serve the ethanol plant from the other one. This is the line route that we've proposed to the plant, to the Public Utility Commission that we would like to build. It gives us a mile separation between the 69 kV line up here in green and the line route here, and it gives us a mile and a half separation here. Also, it gives us a point where we can do away with this future plan of a 115 along here and tie into this line somewhere in the northwest corner and go on and tie into the line that goes on up to Hartford in the future. So we're trying to accomplish two things here: tie into our long-range plans as well as meet the immediate needs. We've driven this area. I found that the Department of Transportation maps for population and housing to be inaccurate. So since our meeting at Groton, our staff has gone out and tried to identify which houses are occupied in this area and which ones are not. There's three houses unoccupied that I could tell. There's one here, there's one up in this section 18, and there's one over here in the northeast corner of 15. The rest of the homes are occupied. I want to bring the commissioner's attention to this piece up here immediately out of Virgil Fodna substation. I've stated previously, and I will in the future, that East River's first preference is not to go on the quarter line, but to utilize the transportation corridors that exist, because it's harder to respond during outages to lines that are out on the quarter line. This particular line, however, our original construction design would bring it out of the Virgil Fodna to the south side of the road, come up to the intersection, and come south to tie in and go on to the Chancellor ethanol plant. I need to bring up this great dark green line also. That represents the Western Area Power Administration's steel structured line, the great big lattice towers. This line comes out of Pickstown, South Dakota, brings the power into this substation, and it continues on up to Sioux Falls. The homeowners here on the south side of the road asked us to consider coming around on the quarter line and not coming in the front of their houses. It was a win situation for them to come around. Likewise for East River Electric to try and scrunch our line down, so to speak, to come under the 230 line. We can do that, but it's not the ideal scenario. So this is a win situation for both East River and the members that are the owners of the homes here. The landowner worked with us to give us an easement to come down the quarter line. Here we tie into the transportation routes and we follow those on into the ethanol plant. The areas in yellow are where we have signed easements to be on private land. The areas that are not in yellow, we do not have signed easements for. And the members of the public are here, and I'm sure there's members that will speak to this issue. There are some members, some landowners that have indicated they do not want additional encumbrances on their property. Certainly, as in all projects, there are landowners that would wish the transmission line would go away in its entirety or go somewhere else. We do have two landowners that have indicated that they do not want to sign an easement until we can show them exactly where the poles will be placed. So there is a possibility of some easements coming on in the future. Transmission structures. This is the structure that we would use on the transmission line. It's a single pole structure with side mount insulators. It has three conductors to bring the electricity, and then one on the top, a shield wire, to attract electricity to in lightning storms. We'd like the lightning to hit that line and bleed down the pole into the ground rather than hitting the conductor and impacting the electric system for all of us. This structure is the structure that we'd use to go under the 230 Western Area Power Line. It's a squat structure. It gives us the clearance requirement is 20 feet and a couple of inches. This will give us 26 feet, so we're well above the National Electric Code, and it gives us the adequate 15 feet of clearance to Western Area's line above us. Easements. This is a 69 kV line that I'm using as an example. The fence line, let's use that as the property line. Here the poles for the transmission line are placed immediately on the private side of the fence. If the landowner declines to provide us an easement, then we'll move the poles and we'll place them on the public side of the fence. And that's what this drawing shows. Again, the fence representing the property line. Here's the road, the public right-of-way, and the private land. As you can see, the insulator sticks out over the private land. We'd like to build a structure this way, and we'll ask the landowners for an overhang easement. However, if they decline to provide an overhang easement, we'll place the three insulators on the public side and build the line in that fashion. Six governmental agencies beside are required to review our project and give us their approval. We have the approval from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, the Army Corps of Engineers, the South Dakota Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Game and Fish and Parks, the South Dakota Historical Society. We've had an archaeologist walk the line where we have private easements to look for historical artifacts. And now we're asking the South Dakota Public Utility Commission for their permission to build the line. County franchises, we've met with both Lincoln and Turner counties, made a presentation to the county commission, explained what we're trying to do and why, and they've given us the franchises, which is permission to build in their public right-of-way. Time frame for construction, if we receive our permits, is to begin late in 2008. I would say this is going to be after the crops are out, and complete it early in 2009. This sheet's along to give contacts. Myself, Ron Golden, he was the lead land agent, and Jim Edwards, our assistant general manager of operations. Lights, please, and that's it, Mr. Chairman.
We're off the record for a second. Are you okay? Okay, go right ahead.
Usually we a lot of times take commissioner questions first. It's up to you.
Thank you, Banna.
Thank you.
Okay. I'll go to you first then.
Yeah.
Scary, I really want to get back on that fair right now.
Be sure to put on a few Hanson sticker.
Yeah. Set? Okay. We're back on the record then. And Mr. Saar, you said folks have one item you wanted to add?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Commissioner. That concludes our presentation, but I'm going to ask Jim Edwards to provide one point of clarification. So if I may, I'll turn the mic over to Mr. Edwards. And at that point, Mr. Chairman, we will have completed our presentation. Would be happy to answer any questions from the commissioners, commission staff, or the audience. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yes, and in Dan Wall's presentation, he talked about the capacity limit to the ethanol plant until the line is completed. We had set it at 14, and I guess the clarification, we have worked with the ethanol plant. Their load is running around 16 megawatts now, and we have done some things to allow it that we can serve that expanded plant at the 16, although we are somewhat limited, but we are serving, instead of the 14 limit that he mentioned on the record, it's at 16 to accommodate the ethanol plant. It looks like they're going to have additional load that will come on at a later date, and that's the need we're needing for the line to be able to serve additional load as well.
Thank you very much for that clarification. Ladies and gentlemen, we turn the meeting over then to you because this is a public hearing. We would like to hear what you have to say, and the company, East River, would very much like to have an opportunity to engage in conversation with you and hear your questions and your concerns. By all means, we want to hear from everyone who has any concerns. So just raise your hand and start us off. By the way, Bob Knadel is going to act as our, this part will be off the record, Vanna White, we're back on the record. And so if you, he'll walk over with a microphone. Please, by all means, we're informal here, even though we have the microphones and such, but we'd really like to hear from you. Yes, sir.
No, he's going to bring it to you. My name's Jeff Goldie. I live right by the...
Please spell your last name, Jeff.
G-O-L-D-I-E. I live half mile west of the Fodness plant, or whatever you call it. And when they put that up, our road is still ruined from that. Are they going to do something better with the roads?
Thank you for the question. East River?
Yes. Give me a little feedback here. Mr. Chairman, we'd be happy to respond. And I will turn the mic over to Mr. Edwards.
Please.
Just a point of clarification. You live a half a mile to the west. And what? Okay. And what section of line road is? 27. Where's that at? West of Fodness? Okay. And I guess I'd ask, was the damage done by us? I mean, we came in from the highway toward Fodness, not toward the west, so.
You came in from the blacktop from TLS Road, mm-hmm. and put some kind of tree sap or calcium chloride or whatever on it the first year, and it has been ruined since. It's, you about have to have four-wheel drive on an ice day.
And what we, to clarify, I believe what we put on, I'm going to look back here, it was a soy oil additive is what we put down on the road. I guess we can take a look at the section of road from the highway over toward Fodness and see what it's, you know. Okay. I guess we'll take a look at it.
Thank you for bringing that up, and East River will take a look at that and get back to you, Jeff. Just a little clarification. We encourage the dialogue, the discussion back and forth, and we don't want to formalize it by being recognized by the chair or anything like that. but I want to make certain that we don't talk over each other. A number of different people talking at the same time, it's very difficult for her to figure out who's saying what. So just make sure you, if you can pause in between discussions and make sure you don't talk at the same time someone else is speaking. Thank you.
And if I may, Commissioner Hansen, I guess we will need to take a look at, I know since we built Fodness, there's a lot more traffic on the road besides us. I mean, there's a lot of people going up and down the road. We do have heavy equipment that goes up and down. We kind of stop at Fodness. I know we took that road on the way here to the meeting, and as you get farther west of Fodness, it even gets, seems like it gets worse and worse. But we'll take a look at the section where we're at and see what we can do. And I guess that's a good one. But Dan said what we'll do, which probably is the right thing to do, is meet with the township board and talk to them, see what needs to get their input as well.
Talk to anybody that drives that thing, and they'll tell you where it's bad, from the power station to the highway.
And with each of the questions this evening, East River will, of course, after they engage in the conversations, they'll provide information to the Public Utilities Commission so that we'll be aware of exactly what is taking place as well. Thank you. Further questions? Yes, sir.
I'm Jim Peterson. I guess my original question, you know, you got the 69 kV coming in, and you gave reasons why you didn't use that same line and go combination for redundancy. Now, do I understand this right? But coming into the Fodness station, you're running line like that, 69 kV and 115. So why don't you have redundant lines coming in that way? And I guess I thought originally what, you know, makes sense to me is you'd run your 69 kV line and just add your 115. But, yeah, you did address that with tornadoes and that, which, in my mind, if it clips the 69 kV, it's getting the 115. I mean, the tornado scenario, but just – main question is why it's not that way on the east side of Fodness.
No, that's a good question. And as I said, comments, the first thing we looked at is the double circuit. And as you picked up on the issue of the Mother Nature, the ethanol plant is needs are different than what we see to the east of Sioux Falls. The ethanol plant is one consumer, and we're trying to bring two feeds to that consumer. So if they could both be lost at the same time if they're on the same structure. I hope I understood it. I'm just joking, but the ethanol plant's needs in eastern Sioux Falls. The gentleman's asking, we do a double circuit going east from Virgil Fodness. Why not do a double circuit coming west to the ethanol plant? The ethanol plant, as I said in my presentation, needs two services. And if they're both on the same structure, they could be lost by Mother Nature. And I think you agreed that you understood what I tried to convey. To the west of Sioux Falls, those two lines do not go to the same customers. One line, the 69 kV line, goes to the interstate, and it goes south, and it ties in ultimately with the high-voltage station at Beersford. There's a number of substations along that line. The 115 kV line goes west, and it departs the double structure at the interstate. And I'm letting back up. It goes east from Virgil Fodness. It departs the double circuit at the interstate and continues on toward Harrisburg, and then on up toward Brandon on the east side of Sioux Falls. If the line were lost outside of Virgil Fodness, between Virgil Fodness and the interstate, it's tied to another high voltage on the other end of the line, so those substations could be fed back where the ethanol plant doesn't have that luxury. Hopefully that answers your question.
Excuse me, can everyone hear all right? It's a little bit challenging from where we're sitting. I just want to make sure, is it possible to turn the air conditioners at a lower level, or is it It's not a matter of sound. It's just the reverberation or something like that. I don't want to turn it off and make everybody uncomfortable, but maybe if just one, if we could turn just this one off. Okay, can you turn that one on so the people keep cool? Or is that the noisy one? Does that work all right for folks, or is that too noisy? I can hear. My main concern is for the court reporter to be able to follow it. So, all right. If anybody has a challenge with hearing, please let us know. Additional questions? Yes, sir.
I'm Edward Fett, and this line really goes on the south side of the road past my place. I'm in Section 9. A couple questions that I, just viewing this and that I'm questioning is, you were talking about going straight west out of the Virgil Fudness substation because you didn't want two lines together because of storm purposes. Don't you feel that there's a terrible possibility of the big line coming up from Pickstown? You're going underneath of that in case of storm? That looks like a big concern of mine, as well as you guys running the two together on 274th Street. The other question that I have got is, I was told that eventually you wanted to tee off and go to the Marion ethanol plant also at some time. It just seems like to me that 274th route would be the further north, that you could tee off of that easier than coming down and having to build back north again to Marion at an expense of a line building. So that's what I'm questioning.
I'll answer the first question with the steel structures first. You had a question about us going under the steel structures. Whenever you're near another transmission line, there is some concerns. The one I would say on the steel structures that you see, they're fairly large, and that's for a reason. Their design strengths are a lot different than a wooden pole structure. They're the 230 lines. A tornado will take them out, but it's going to be a fairly severe storm to take those out. If the odds of it, when we go underneath it, that the span that's affected is the one that's right above our line, we feel is fairly remote. I mean, it'd have to be a storm hitting right there. If it dropped the steel line down on our structure, it probably took our structure down as well. As you said, we don't have a lot of clearance. If one storm went through, it could hit both of them, but we feel like we have a better chance with having some distance between them. Example uses just not storms. No offense if some of you are farmers, there's some really big farm equipment out there nowadays that tends to get in our lines and hit our lines, so we're trying to keep them separated. The other one is on a double circuit line, the clearances, as Dan mentioned, are so tight that our linemen can't work on one circuit with the other one being energized. So if we've got to work on one, we've got to take both of them out. Having separation, if we need to work on one, we can still keep the other one energized. And I've got it. And your third question was this building over to the Marion ethanol plant. I'm going to have to look at Ken, but I don't believe that is in our long range plan of building a 115 over to Marion. Not at this time. We don't really have a plan to build over to Marion. The Marion ethanol plant, we have a looped 69 kV system that serves them, so it's not the same as this. Our desire for this 115 would actually build toward the north up to Hanlon, but not over toward Marion.
Thank you very much, sir. Additional questions? Was your question answered, do you feel?
Well, I just feel, will Marion eventually have to be addressed at a later date? I mean, would it be the thing to do it now rather than down the road?
We've actually, to serve the Marion ethanol plant, we upgraded a line coming from Hanlon South to the substation. So we have another line over to it. So we built a heavy enough line to serve the Marion ethanol plant. So we addressed that a different way. Our intent was not to come over from Fodness. And one of the reasons is there's two ethanol plants, very large load. trying to put them on separate circuits, separate lines, separate deliveries to kind of balance the load out. So that's why we've got Marion served from, it's fed up toward the north toward Hanlon. This one we feed from the east from Fodness, splitting up the loads.
Commissioner Colbeck?
I was just, sir, did you mention something about Pickstown? I didn't follow that one. Oh, okay, okay. I got you. Okay, no problem. Thank you.
Further questions? Further questions or comments? Feel like an auction here, and it's getting right down towards the bed here. Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm Rick Suri. I'm the general manager of Poet Biorefining Chancellor, Great Plains Ethanol out here. And we truly are in support of the project, of course, obviously. And we need it, not only for redundant feed, but for future expansion. So we're completely in favor of the project and basically need to get this done. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions?
Yes. What would be the revenue generated?
Your name, sir?
Kelly Klein-Waltrink. What would be the expected revenue generated out of the Fodna substation in the next 5 or 10 years?
Revenue, as you mean, as from electricity? I can't answer that question. I don't have an answer of what energy is going out of there. As we said, we're wholesalers, so we've got this electric energy, and it's not a question I guess I can answer.
My question is, the revenue that is going to be generated out of there, I feel there should be a road improvement from the blacktop at least to the Fodna Center. I live on the same road as Jeff, along with Chuck, and that road has been a disaster for 2 years.
Okay, I guess my answer is I can't really answer on the revenue, but I will, with other gentlemen, I guess the commitment, we'll meet with the township board, take a look at the road, see what, if we were a cause of damage, which you're indicating we are, take a look, see what needs to be done, and I guess that's what we need to do is visit with the township board. I mean, I don't know if any of you are on the township, but we need somebody who's responsible for the road and take a look at what needs to be done if we were responsible for it.
Further questions or comments?
My name is Brad Chardine, the manager at Southeastern Electric Co-op, and these are tough situations to go through with the additions of plant facilities to serve our members out there. Poet Chancellor is by far our largest member. From our standpoint, and I know from Rick's standpoint, whenever we have an outage that occurs or similar to you people who are members of ours out there, it creates difficult situations, and I think what the avenue is through East River and supporting them and the activities they have going on, trying to get some separation and trying to get some better service out there for the expanding loads and help the ethanol plant expand and do the services that they need for the ethanol industry out there too. So we want to say we support it and appreciate working with the members and the PUC going through the hearing process that you guys have here to discuss these issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Further, yes, ma'am.
My name is Diane Christensen, and my question is this. I'd like to have the East River explain why they cannot go underground across a residential property, not agricultural, but residential.
No, that's a very good question. That's the first time I've heard it specified as to residential rather than a agriculture, but There's a number of reasons. First, let me get the first one out and we'll on the table, and then we'll move on to the other ones. Money is the first. A 115 kV line, and I can try to be accurate, but the escalation of copper 30% in the last 2 years, the escalation of steel, wood products. My best guess is a 115 kV transmission line will cost us about $130,000 a mile. 2 years ago, I went out and investigated. 3 years ago, I went out and investigated underground costs, because it's a very good question, and we're always asked that. For an underground line, it's a different type of a conductor. It has to have a covering on it. 115,000 volts creates heat. There has to be a way to take care of the heat. The places where it's spliced, the distribution system, at its lower voltage, you'll see some boxes above ground. But for 115,000 volts or higher, it would be vaults, underground, concrete vaults. The life expectancy of the cable is only half the life expectancy as overhead cable. So we'd have to have additional cable on hand. Ultimately, the price for underground is 10 times more expensive than overhead. So where it cost me $130,000, it would be $1,300,000. And I get it asked all the time. In the next year and a half, East River will be building 160 miles of transmission line. We do this to help the members, the distribution cooperatives, but then our costs are passed on to the distribution members, and in turn they're passed on to the consumers. So our goal is to try and keep the electricity costs down. That's the direction we get from the board of directors. Back to the 160 miles of transmission line. At 130 or 120, well, I used 120 miles before I came in tonight anticipating this question. But at $120,000 a mile, 160 miles is just over $19 million. If I buried that 160 miles of transmission line to be equal to everyone, that's $190 million, and all that would come back. So it's, and I didn't touch on maintenance. We have to, which are important parts, if I get away from the money. Being able to respond to an outage, if weather or something happens in overhead line, we can patrol and find that and respond more quickly. An underground line, it'll be difficult to identify the problem. We'd have to have spare lines underground so that we could disconnect the damaged one and hook up the good one so that we could get the power restored. Training the people and having the equipment to find the outages would be an investment. I used to explain it, it's kind of like building a barn to milk 100 cows, but you're only milking one or two. That's the kind of upgrade we'd have to do with our equipment and manpower to respond to underground. That's not saying that it's not going to happen someday. And if you go into Iowa or Minnesota, there's some issues around airports. Downtown Minneapolis, you'll find a substation underground. So those people do that elsewhere. Right now, that's the best answer I can give you. I think that's my honest answer. So hopefully, I'm sure it doesn't. You'd just as soon have it buried, but that's my answer.
I understand. I don't agree, but I understand.
Thanks for the question.
I've got two questions. One is, who's paying for this line? Are we as customers now going to be paying so that the ethanol plant can have more electricity? Are our bills going to go down because you're selling more electricity? And the second question is this Fodna station going to look like the back of a computer with a bunch of wires coming everywhere someday?
That's Jeff Goldie.
I'll answer your first question with the paying for it. We're building in to serve the ethanol plant. The ethanol plant has expanded, so there's increased energy sales by Southeastern to the ethanol plant, and then we have increased sales too. So what we do is we build in facilities for two reasons. One, for load growth, and we look at when we're building facilities and look at the load growth and seeing that the load growth will help pay for the facilities, and that's what we looked at here. It is also of a benefit to the area, as Dan mentioned. Ethanol plant has low growth, paying more sales, paying more to Southeastern. We've also, as Dan said, it solves two problems. In the future, it's also something that we'd probably have to do for other low growth as well. So when we look at building facilities, we try to build facilities for the short term, as Dan mentioned, looking at the low growth, and then we look at it long term, that can be a benefit to all the other members and help them on that. I guess your question is, are your electric rates going to go down because of this? No, I don't see that. But I don't know if going up, the electric rates are going up, but a lot of it has to do with having to build new generation and things like that. Podness has got some lines coming out of it. That's why I look at what we've got coming out of that substation. We've now got a couple of 69 kV circuits out of there and some 115 kV circuits out. Realizing that if we need additional circuits out, we are probably going to have to, in some cases, double circuit some circuits like we talked about. But when we do that, we try to double circuit the ones that have different sources and not going to the same location.
Thank you. Yes?
Did that answer your question, Jeff? I think in general, though, and there's a lot of discussion about making sure that we have a rate structure set up, and we're a power supplier for the cooperatives. We are a cooperative. We're owned by the cooperatives in South Dakota and Minnesota. So we operate not in a profit model. You know, we operate in a model that encourages and works to deliver the lowest cost energy for all our members. And as Mr. Edwards explained, and now as you probably most people in the room realize, we are in an era where irrespective of these type of large loads coming into play, a lot of factors are contributing to rising utility costs. I think in general, when we've analyzed and looked at this, these large loads tend to help the cooperatives that are serving them, as well as the other cooperatives who are part of the East River and ultimately the Basin Electric family, because it ends up encouraging growth, and we work on the rate side of things to make sure that it is being done in a way that's fair to that new customer, the expanding customer, and also the existing customers. And I think ultimately, and I'd be happy to, and I'm sure Brad Chardine could discuss this in more detail as well, but I think ultimately it is one of these situations where the growth of the ethanol industry not only has a tremendous positive impact to the communities and to the farmers and to everyone in this area, but also when you come look at the way that the rates end up to the member owners of those cooperatives and that the growth in the system and the way that the agreements are structured tend to also benefit those members as well. So the large loads ultimately bring some significant benefits to the other member consumers of those cooperatives.
Further questions or comments?
Jim Peterson. I guess I keep looking at the map and wondering how the exact route was picked out. So I followed along there to 275th Street. You see four buildings on the south side, residents, so you guys decide to jump away from them. Well, when you come south, that little square with the red through it's my place, and no one's talked to me about going across the road or making any concessions there. I have not signed an easement. I don't want them on my property, but I've not been talked to since and didn't know if there's anything. I guess my question, since I just have a single household, tough, but these four here could get a concession and have it moved to the north.
Do you know, Mr. Peterson, I don't want to put you on the spot, but could you go up and point to your residence? I think that'd be helpful for everybody. Thank you. And it does look like there is, and I will freely admit I'm not the expert in the room on this map, it does look like there is somebody directly across the road from you.
It just hasn't been discussed. It's pretty much here we come. I'm not given an easement.
and which is fine, I guess, but just when I see there's concessions made out of Fodness, and then the thing's running when it gets on 275th on the south side, and then all of a sudden, boom, we can jump it across the road for some other people. So I'm just curious how that decision's made.
And I think I'll let Mr. Wall take a shot at this one, but, I mean, just looking at the map, if we were to cut across, you're going to be, although it will be south, you're going to be, well, first of all, there's probably some issues with that intersection above it, but then you're also, it looks like there are two landowners, and albeit the one is a little bit further north than you on the west side of the road as well, but I'll let Miss...
Follow some of those big feeder lines through Minnesota. I mean, I've noticed a lot of it. They do move them.
Well, and
that house to the north is a quarter mile. I mean, it can come down and jump over. I know it does cost more. It's my property. I don't want it there on that close with the humming you get in the fog days. And there's issues there been addressed.
And if you will, I'd like to turn the mic over to Mr. Wall and see if he has some specifics on this because he knows the route far better than I. Thank you.
Unfortunately, I can give you some my assumptions. I drove it again coming over today. I'm aware of your home and the trees that you have up against the road. Southeastern has a line along that there also that serves in your house. Correct. We come down this road. Correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't there a huge tree on the west side of the road down here further to the south? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I think there is.
And I'm making the assumption that that tree is driving the decision. It's on private land. Coming down the public ditch, yes, if we could get an... there's always the possibility if we could get an easement from you to come across the road and come down and jump back, but... to make those type of turns, we need to put in down guys. It's an engineering issue so that the poles don't tip over in the, down the road. So we would have to work with the landowners to be able to place down guys out. On your land, possibly we could do it to the north side where the trees are and tuck the down guys into the trees. But as we come further to the south on the road and we approach that large tree, I don't know what the landowner will allow there for anchors. And likewise, when we leave your side of the road and jump to the west, I have to have the landowner work with anchors on that side. And then when we jump from the west back to the east, I have to have the landowner work with us for anchors as well. Corners, they create, you know, a chain is just as strong as its weakest link. And corners are a weak link in a transmission line. So we try to limit, if possible, the corners. Yes, you can... here it's a trade-off. There'd be one corner here. We've created two corners here, but the trade-off of not in, to tuck underneath the high voltage line, that's a weak link also that we try to avoid. I don't know what to tell you. The Southeastern Electric is going to bury that line so it's not in the way. The distribution line that comes in, I assume, serves your home. So our transmission line, we go back in. I know it doesn't make you happy trading one line for a line, but we're yes, sir, and it'd be taller poles. But those are the issues, and if I'm correct, there's that huge tree to the south. That was what's driving it.
An old cottonwood versus my property. So, but I'm not signing an easement. I guess what you've said, as long as that holds true, be staying right away and don't hang over the property. I suppose I lose any rights to where pole placement is. I realize you'll have to put them where you need to, but I assume it would be within reason.
There are limitations, but the spans are 260 to 300 feet, and we'll be happy to work with you. And we work with other landowners there's landowners with... they like to see their cornfield, and we'll work with those to try and do our pole placement, and we'll be happy to work with you on our pole placement. the last thing we want to do is make enemies with people. We want to try and get it built without impacting the people as much as we can. As little as we can.
I just want to make sure it's fair. I mean, a little bit of look, question. You know, I'm just one. But if you got enough, I'm okay, we'll jump her across and stay away from you. But just want to comment.
I appreciate that.
If I may make one comment, you mentioned you didn't give us an easement in that, you know, you lost out. But we'll work with the landowners anyway in front of theirs. Even if we're on the road right away, we'll work with them to minimize. There's places you can span to maybe review and stuff. So we'll work with you.
Any other questions? While Bob's walking the mic over there, I just might add that it's not that the commissioners are not inquisitive for our not asking questions, but we've asked a lot of questions of these folks on items of this nature, and so this is a public hearing, and we'll have our shot at them as well. So please continue, sir.
Yeah, I'm Bud Rippentrop, and I live on 275th Street, and I guess I just wondered what's going to happen somewhere down the line. They're going to widen that road, I'm sure, or something's going to happen. Then what happens? Are they going to – they're on the other side of the road from me. I'm in Section 18. So I guess when it comes down to it and they're – okay. Anyhow, I was just wondering what possessed them to go down the blacktop as opposed to jumping a mile south probably on 276th Street. There's like 2 miles in there and there's hardly anyone there. You see what I'm saying? I don't know. Maybe you're getting more corners than what I'm seeing or whatever. I'm no engineer. I'm just Joe Blow, but.
This is Dan Wall again. There's two questions, I believe. Why not down to 276th Street, number one, and number two, what if the roads that the transmission line follows are widened, whether they're any of the roads? The two goals were the separation from the 69 KV line and a jump-off point somewhere in the northwest corner of this line onto Hartford. So we're trying to keep our line separated, but yet further to the north in here so that we can come off in the future. That's the engineering behind that. Yes, why not come down here or down this road and across straight into the ethanol plant? Again, in the future, to tie in with our long-range plan, we'd be coming back up. So we're trying to get that corner as close to tie in with the future plans as possible. Expansion of the roads in the future, whether it's a state road, township road, or a county road, when the governmental entity widens the road, we have to adjust our transmission lines to give the clearance that's required. If we have a private easement, it's the governmental entity that pays to relocate the cooperative's facilities. Okay. If we're on the have a private easement, and the governmental entity wants to widen the road, the governmental entity pays to relocate the facilities, electric facilities, telephone facilities, rural water, the governmental entity pays. If I'm in the public right away, then the cooperative has to pay to relocate its lines. The rural water, the telephone, likewise, if you're in the public. So that's when they give us a franchise to locate in the public right-of-way with the understanding that if there's a road widening in the future, we have to relocate. So that's the purpose of purchasing a private easement. Again, in the long run, we save the cooperative members money down the road should the roads be widened. I'm sorry. Where did I leave off? The money of purchasing the easement versus relocating in the future. So it's just another step of trying to hold down the cooperative members' cost to purchase the private easements and locate the transmission line in the private easements.
What I'm saying is, if it comes down to it, then even though they will be in the right way across the road to
leave, they'll give you an easement. What I'm saying is you'll still back the line up. It's not going to look like a snake or something like that to where you guys got enough clout, you take more of my ground, say, when they come down that road. It's going to be straight as the arrow flies?
It'll be at the outside edge of the public right-of-way. In other words, if they expand the county road an additional 40 feet, 20 feet on either side, they will allow us to move in the public right-of-way out that 20 feet back to the edge of the public right-of-way.
Yeah, see, I was just concerned of if it came down there, I don't know whether the power company had enough clout to where they're going to snake the road or something. You know, you see it once in a while. In the good old days, they used to dodge trees and stuff like that. Your line's not going to be able to, they're not going to come over on the south side and take 45 off me or 50 off me and the other off the north.
The utility does not have the clout to dictate to the governmental entity how to build the roads. That's their engineering firm that builds it, and they dictate to us what we can do and can't do in their public right of way.
That's what I wanted to know.
Good. Further questions? Going once? Yes, sir.
I'll go with one more.
All right.
Bud Rippentrop again. Is this going to affect anything for, like, reception, TV, radio, and stuff like that? I'm not on cable. I'm the old rabbit ear man with three stations. So if you guys come in, am I going to be watching Snow City?
We've got... East River's got about 2,600 miles of transmission line going through rural areas and things like that. Typical transmission lines like this don't cause interference with television, radio, or anything else. It can happen if you get a loose piece of hardware, like a bolt that comes loose at times. We can come out and fix that. But typically, we don't have radio problems. Also, at times you may hear where electric power lines give off a noise, what they call corona. That's usually on high voltage lines, like 500 kV and above, on the real big steel towers, bigger than what's this here. But I've got, in town, you think about there's power lines in town that are just a little lower voltage. They're doing the exact same thing. So, no, you shouldn't have interference. If you do have some, it's going to be a localized problem, like a piece of loose hardware, something we can fix. But I'm going to look at Dan. Radio interference, noise interference question on our system is almost non-existent. I guess I can't tell you the last time.
The bottom line being, if you have problems, give us a call, and we'll be happy to come out and investigate and find the cause of it. If it's our cause, we'll remedy it for you. We'll remedy it.
The cooperatives even have. We have a device, if need to be. It's called a RF, radio frequency interference detector. You go out there and it'll pick up a crackling noise. So there's some equipment out there that can be used to find the problem, if there is a problem.
Mrs. Christensen?
Yes. Diane Christensen. We also have not granted an easement on our property. We are just to the north of the Petersons on the corner. What repair do you do in the right-of-way? That is almost considered part of our frontage. We mow it. we don't have a large frontage area. It would be pretty much as if we lived in a city. And I guess I am wondering, are you going to repair the ditches to the point that they can be maintained by us again?
This is Dan Wall again. I drove by your house, and yes, you are close to the road. I agree. Yes, heavy equipment, wet conditions, and driving in a ditch, anyone can make ruts in there. And now, it goes back to my statement to the other gentleman. Our role is not to make enemies. So I would be glad to make certain that you're happy with your ditch. I can't say that during the construction phase there won't be ruts, but we'll be glad to come back in and smooth those out, add dirt, and reseed it. I understand. I've seen you mow out into the ditch. The townships or the county engineers, they're going to want our transmission line as far from the road as possible in the ditch area. I don't remember offhand if you had any large trees in your front yard, but we can place the pole to try and have the tree block the view of the pole and work with you as much as we can. But I cannot place the poles next to the road to give you that use of that complete ditch because there's safety issues that the pole has to be as far back from the road as I can get it. Yes?
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Sure,
Mr. Christensen, I'll just to give you a little more confidence, we had another utility company, not this one certainly, but another utility company that didn't necessarily take care of business to the satisfaction of a landowner along another line that wasn't that far from here. And the commission staff and the public utilities commissioners got personally involved in making sure that that was taken care of. And it's a good utility company. I don't have any reason to believe they won't take care of you, but if they don't, we're not going away.
Hi, Nicole Peterson. Will there be a contact person once installation is started? If we have issues with the pole placement or any questions as the process gets going, will we have a contact person?
That's a very good question. What will come out of the process, and maybe the chairman would rather speak to this, but what will come out of the process is a permit will be given to the utility to construct it. The utility, my department specifically, will have to put a mailing out to all the landowners along the transmission line. And in that mailing, we'll explain what we're doing. It will identify what the permit says. And yes, we have to give you all the names for contacts that you can call. And it'll be a toll-free number. You've possibly met Kurt before. I do not see any reason why Kurt or his boss, Ron Golden, back at the computer. Those will be the two people that come out and meet with you. And I would rather have you call and have a problem fester and just get to be a bigger problem.
That's a good question. Any further questions?
I'm Edward Fett again. I have a question. I know that you guys are compensating the landowners along the road for the poles, or I don't know how the compensation, like I told you before, the line is not on my land, so but with the land around the T area south of Sioux Falls actually, sadly, is picking up development value rather than agricultural value. What have you guys determined anything? What the value of this property, I mean, even though there's not poles on it, the unsightly lines across the road, what kind of a negative effect will that have on the value of the property? It has no problem with agricultural value, but for development property.
Another good question, often asked by the consumers along the line where transmission line route is, whether it's in the urban area around T or Brandon, South Dakota. Again, the homeowner would just assume the line go away somewhere else. We cannot, and we've had, I am not aware of an impact to the transmission line on land values, honestly. what I have seen, right or wrong, is if you live there, and I have a rural residence up by Madison, if the transmission line is built along there and it wasn't before, I'll remember that thing forever. And if it's there and I come in to buy on a fresh lot and I want to put a house up, the mental image doesn't stay. It isn't a fact when people are buying the land. And I can take you to Brandon where they're buying land and putting $350,000 homes next to the transmission line. But I can also take you to T, South Dakota, where a subdivision, we built a transmission line, and they were unhappy with the line because they lived there ahead of time. So for land values, when you're selling a piece of property, the impact isn't there because the line's there when they come to buy the property, and it's our experience that they're buying the property, and they continue to buy the property, and it's not affecting the land values. I
understand. You can truthfully say that. You feel that that's...
Yes. I cannot show you a study, but that's the best answer I have for you.
The other question that I have to you guys, and you guys have answered it partway also, about building through the middle of the section rather than on a road because you want road frontage for repair purposes, access, and everything. As I just sit here and look at that tonight, and a lot of the problems that's been asked here tonight, I realize it, you know, it wouldn't give you the ability to get in and repair your line, especially with crops in the field, but geez, if you take that down the half mile line, you just about wouldn't affect any of these people. Regardless, like I say, it would, if you had to get in to repair, it would cause a problem. You guys have taken that into consideration that you feel going past the residential places is well worth having it out in the field?
The short answer is yes. Let's see, there's two engineers previous to Ken, and Ken's been there 30 years, but two engineers prior to him, the engineer felt as you did. Let's build our transmission lines down the quarter line. And we have a great deal down the quarter line. And I can also show you that we have a great deal of problems on those lines in the middle of winter trying to respond to outages. Today's world will not tolerate that. They won't tolerate a blink. It's our responsibility to get the power back on as quickly as we can. Our first preference because of that is to stay on the transportation routes and not go on the quarter lines because I anticipate those kind of problems. So yes, I say that from experience. Our quarter lines impacting crops, it's just a much better situation all the way around if we can get it next to the transportation routes.
Well, I just look at the what's proposed to do to the neighbor's grove across the road from me, the large evergreen trees that they've got slated to be taken out and stuff. I just, you know, like I said, it doesn't affect me, but I can sure feel for them.
For the question or comment? Mr. Saar?
If I may make one final comment, and we appreciate the questions, and I think a lot of good issues were raised, and Mr. Wall and certainly the other East River employees made every effort to answer those questions. But what I want to let you all know is we are an organization that prides ourselves in working on behalf of our members, treating landowners, whether they're members or not members of the cooperatives we serve, the right way. So I hope if you continue to have questions or concerns or something comes up, whether it's, you know, radio signals or any other landowner type issues, we are just up the road in Madison, South Dakota. We have just over 100 employees. You call up during the day, you talk to a real person. And we will do everything we can to get somebody out here to meet with you, to work with you, and to address your concerns, walk you through it, explain our side of things, look for mutually acceptable solutions. And I just want everyone to know that we are there to do the right thing for the landowners and to work with you and do everything we can to come up with solutions that'll work best for everyone. We realize that there are some situations where for whatever reason, we may not be able to do precisely what you want, but I will guarantee that we will take the time to personally meet with you and try to solve problems, and we will be committed to that throughout this process and after this process, and as long as we're out there serving people in this area, customer service and working with the people who own our utility and the people in the state of South Dakota, that's job number one for us. So we will continue to do so, and please do not hesitate to contact us. And if you forget who we are, where we're at, Southeastern will be able to assist you with that, and I'm sure they share all those same commitments and values as well. So we want to be good members of the community, and we're committed to working with you. So thank you for all the questions, and certainly I know the commissioners share those feelings as well. And as Commissioner Johnson pointed out, if something's going on that you don't think's right, they are there to work on your behalf and to be an advocate and make sure that you are, in fact, being treated the way you should be treated. So our commitment, and certainly the commitment of the commission as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Saar. Are there any further questions or comments? If not, we sincerely appreciate the attendance here this evening. We appreciate all of the questions and all of the comments that were made. The commission is very interested in knowing how you feel, and that's why we conduct these public hearings, certainly. If you have additional concerns, you may send them to the Public Utilities Commission. I would remind you, we'd like you to sign in if you have not, and if you have additional questions, certainly the utility company is available to answer those questions to you. As Mr. Saar pointed out, they have a phone number. You can certainly call and contact them anytime. Thank you very much. We will adjourn the hearing then this evening.